This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. I'd like to begin this week's episode by thanking each and every one of you listeners for tuning in from week to week and also from day to day whenever I do my daily updates from Magic Conventions. Thank you very much for listening. I try to have a little bit of everything for everyone, but in particular, when people are tuning in just to listen to the conversations that I'm having with my guests, keep in mind that I try to keep these to around about 1 hour or so. So I know I've had a lot of people who have said, I'd like to listen to your podcast while I'm working out or during my drive time to and from work or whatever. So 1 hour seems to be about right. I also try to occasionally do some reviews, that is product reviews of some things that are new that are on the Magic market that you might be interested in, and I put these towards the end. So those of you who want to listen to the conversations with my guests, that'll be in the first part, and then towards the end, when I do have the longer podcasts, that will be the product reviews towards the end. So if you go to the MagicWordPodcast.com, I always have timestamps there, so this way that you know when that I'm going to be starting with the product reviews. So if you want to scroll forward into where I start talking about the product reviews, that's fine. Or if you just want to begin with when I have my conversations with my guests, then you can skip over this first part of when I'm introducing the guests. But I do try to show those in my timestamps as well. So this way that you can get to the meat of why you are here. Some people just like to hear it all from start to finish, and I thank you for that as well. But as I said, I try to have a little bit of something for everyone, and I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in and for listening to the Magic Word Podcast. Well, this week we are going to continue with a couple of mentalists. Last week we spoke with Larry Becker, and I hope that you guys really enjoyed that. If you haven't had a chance to listen to it, please go back in the archives and you can pick that up. It's available all the time, and if you just subscribe to the Magic Word Podcast, then you'll come to your smartphone, to your iPad, to your computer, wherever, so this way that you already have that immediately downloaded in real time, so this way that you don't miss a thing. So I highly recommend that you go out and subscribe to the Magic Word. As I said, last week we spoke with Larry Becker, and this week we're going to speak with someone who has been a longtime listener, but not necessarily the first time that they have been on as a guest, although in the past we've spoken with Jeff and Tessa Evison only the briefest of moments, and I've always wanted to have an opportunity to carve out some time to chat with them for a much longer period. Well, this week's exactly what happened. Well, actually, I say this week. Now, similarly, like with Larry Becker, I had recorded that conversation earlier this year. That was in March of 2017, and here we are now much later in the fall when it was finally released. Likewise, when I spoke with Jeff and Tessa, they were at the Magic Live convention in Las Vegas, and so that's when we had an opportunity to go up to the room, share a bottle of wine, some Bogle Red, which was very good, and I recommend, by the way. And as we were drinking that towards the end, that's when Tessa says, I think I'll call that Boggle rather than Bogle, which I think for mentalists and magicians, yeah, we should call it Boggle. But anyhow, I know that we had just a wonderful time, a great conversation, which you're going to get to enjoy here as well. As I said, that was recorded in Las Vegas, and I'm kind of keeping with the mentalism theme for a couple of reasons. One is that the one with Larry Becker was before Halloween, and here it is after Halloween when this is being broadcast, and I am trying to keep, in a way, kind of a little bit more of a Halloween type of a theme. And I think with a couple of mentalists and really good ones, both last week and then the pair here this week, that kind of keeps with the theme. And speaking of mentalism and Las Vegas, I want to remind everyone about the 14th Mindvention, which is going to be taking place November the 12th through the 14th in Las Vegas. And for more information, go to mindvention.net. This is always a very popular convention that people don't attend. I'm not quite too sure and understand why, when there are some of the top mentalists in the world who convene on Las Vegas during the fall for this annual convention that's hosted by Danny Archer. It's a wonderful thing, and I've attended several times in the past, and it always seems that there are only about 100 people who attend, as opposed to some of the larger conventions, let's say like Magic Live, in which you have like 1,600 or something. Nevertheless, but there is a lot of interest, and I say that because I know when I go back and look at the analytics for this podcast, podcast, I know that one of the more downloaded conventions are the daily updates that I give when I do attend the Mindvention. Well, unfortunately, this year I will not be able to attend, but I hope to make it again next year. Danny always does a great job with this convention, so I recommend that if you're interested in getting excited and thinking about going, you might go back into the archives at the magicwordpodcast.com, dig into it, and you'll kind of get excited about wanting to attend this year. Well, as we get into this podcast here this week with Jeff and Tess Evanson, I don't want to spoil too much of what it is that she and he talk about, but one of the things that they do discuss, at least Tessa in particular, has to do with women in magic. That was one of the conversations that got started by Stan Allen on the very first day, and it kind of opened up a lot of conversations throughout the week with whether that women might have felt intimidated when they were getting started in magic, how they are treated now, etc. And so Tessa addresses that, and I think it's very topical and something of interest and of note that you might be wanting to hear. So be sure and stay tuned for that. So let me introduce our guests for this week, Mr. Jeff and Tessa Evison, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for themagicwordpodcast.com, and it gives me great pleasure to present today a couple of guests who are more than that. They're a couple of friends whom I've known for a long time, and I know that you guys have seen them somewhere, whether it's going to be at a magic convention or whether it's going to be perhaps on television or perhaps on tour, or if some of you people have perhaps booked them yourselves for your corporate affairs. They're from traveling all over the world, reside in Canada, but they're coming down here then right now. We happen to be at Magic Live where we're recording this, and so please welcome the two people whose minds are the same, Jeff and Tessa Evison. Hey, guys.
Hey, Scott. It's great to be here.
Oh, yes. It's a wonderful opportunity to be on your podcast. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much also for listening. You were saying that you had, you are listeners.
Oh, yes.
So you guys travel a lot. So.
We're on the road. We're driving. So we love listening to the show whenever we can.
Yeah. Used to be XM radio constantly, which we still have. But now I think we do more podcasts than anything. So
right.
There's so many good magic podcasts, but yours is number one on our list.
Absolutely. Thank you. That's why I've got, so I'm talking to you guys here today.
It really is. You get some great guests, and there's so much content. You seem to be putting them out so frequently.
I'd learned some time ago that they had said the best thing to do is to try to have some level of consistency, whether it's going to be every other week or once a month or at least sometime so people know to expect this at a certain time, So, yeah, that's what I've been doing. Well, listen, I was wanting to talk with you guys about so many things. One thing is about travel. I mean, so when you guys are traveling, typically do you... I guess just travel across in a car. Do you have a van? Or do you take the train, or what do you like to drive?
I do most of the driving.
He does.
And
I
love
admit.
Driving.
Yes.
We've never had children, and we drive a minivan.
Yes.
Okay.
We've always had a big vehicle.
But you're ready for the kids, I guess.
Right? Well, that'll be another lifetime, I think. We're a little too late for that.
We have nieces and nephews. That's enough.
That's good enough, yeah. But we love driving, although, of course, we fly a lot because we have to. But whenever we know we can drive, we find it just a better way to travel and bring all the stuff that we want to bring. So we're prepared for just about anything.
So whenever you do travel with a lot of stuff, I mean, that's one of the advantages, obviously, with a medalist, where you're traveling with a clipboard and a pen or something, and I think with you guys, as opposed to Tommy Tin and Emily, they've got equipment. You guys don't have a lot of equipment that you carry around as much as they do, do you?
No, we try not to do a lot of that because our act, we do a lot of flying, so don't get me wrong, we drive, but if it's more than 6 hours, we fly. Mm-hmm. Typically.
And it also depends on where we're coming from and going to, so we have to plan the whole week to make sense to get from here and there.
So our act fits in two carry-on suitcases to go in the overhead. We never check in anything that goes, anything that has anything to do with the show.
Mm-hmm.
And if we fly to a, whether it's corporate or even campus, we try to dress in something that we could go on stage with, but our costumes do get checked in. So we carry, actually we travel pretty heavily.
We do. And even in our carry-on cases, we carry a lot of material. And even though we have sort of set shows that we would normally perform, when we get to a venue or if a situation is right, we know we have an effect that might work perfectly.
Yeah.
Or for whatever the situation is, or we get a surprise that we didn't get enough information. We thought we had it all, and we learned that the audience is a little bit different age group or even religious group or something. We're going to shift what we're doing, and we've definitely got it in that case somewhere. So
right. Right. And speaking of doing shows like that, do you, when you go back to do the same audience, let's say you're working for a company, name a company, it doesn't matter, whomever, Exxon or Microsoft or somebody, whoever, do you do the same thing the following year or do you change it up? I mean, mind reading is mind reading as far as kind of what mm-hmm. the two of you do. I mean, obviously there are different objects that you're doing, and but are there certain things that you try to change out when you're doing the same company year after year?
We'll change, let's say, two effects in the show.
Okay.
But the main thing we do is the second sight, the mind reading.
Sure, of course.
Where Tess is blindfolded and I'm in the audience. That doesn't change, however, it kind of does change just because there's new people,
Items. New items, sure.
Yes. Anyway, we can change it up a little bit, but we'll always plug in different effects before or after the show.
You know, that's another thing. Speaking of before and after and plugging in things, I remember at Kreskin, you know, in his mind reading show that he would open with linking finger rings, doing magic to begin with and saying, I'm not a magician, you know, let me get this out of the way and do this. And
I love then, that.
Yeah.
Let me show you magic.
That's right. And he would walk around, you know, get 15 minutes out of it, you know, do very well. And then he would go into the mentalism show and everything. So do you incorporate magic, you know, much or into, I know that there is within the mind reading, but I mean, as far as something that would be typically called a magic trick by magicians, you know what I'm saying?
Not anymore. We used to do the linking finger rings. I think when we started out, way back, we did a magic illusion show.
And the two of you? Really?
That's what we used to
do. No kidding.
That's how we started.
I mean, like sawing in half and you do doves and rabbits and all that? Or how, how far did you go?
Rabbits.
No kidding.
Tessa was impaled.
Yes.
Wow.
In fact, the two-person impalement, which is now pretty much standard, was our idea. So we made the prototype with David Mendoza, where it was like a broom harness ratchet affair, because we were doing cruise ships. We wanted to do the impalement, but we didn't want to have two people lift Tessa up onto the sword.
Sure.
So we came up with the idea of her leaning against the sword and swinging backwards. Mm-hmm. So we did that for years. Mm-hmm. Fairs, cruise ships.
But we also did the typical zigzag, subtrunk. Yeah. We had it all.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun. It was great.
And then we got into the mind reading. When we worked on cruise ships, we started developing the second sight act.
So that wasn't by accident. That was kind of planned. I mean, you had been... How did you transition? I mean, we're here like at Magic Live. I know this will be broadcast sometime later, but the theme has been new directions and detours and things.
Yeah.
So it sounded like you took a major turn there.
Well, we did. I think all along as we were together and after we'd been together for a few years and we were watching different performers on television or videos and, you know, seeing different people aging, and we started thinking to ourselves, what are we going to do when we get
older? In our older age, sure.
Because are our bodies going to look as good as this? Probably not.
Right.
And will we have the strength to do illusions?
Probably
so what
not,
can
yeah.
we move on to next? And, you know, maybe it was a coincidence, as people would say, by chance we heard about, an audio tape about a show, Second Sight Act, and that just piqued our interest right away. And we thought that is exactly where we need to focus our attention.
And the tape we heard, we were off of the ships. We used to do long-term contracts in ships where it was 2 years. We get on as crew staff.
Yeah.
And so, well, they were six-month contracts.
I was going to say,
but
six months usual.
Renewing
them. Okay.
And so at one point we were on, I think we took a one-month break to go home, and then we were right back out. But during that break, our friend, one of my closest childhood friends, he was a mentalist, and he had a tape of an act, a second sight act, and him and his wife wanted to learn it, and he played the tape for us, and we said, wow, that's so beautiful for us. We'd love to do that, and he didn't want us to do it, so we said we wouldn't, but if he ever decided not to, then we would.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what happened. 2 or 3 years later, he just found it too much work, and his wife was not as committed as he was, and they just gave up on it, and he handed everything to us. And so on the ships, we would, every day, we had so much time, we'd work on rehearsing and memorizing and
learning the system.
Learning it. Mm-hmm. And probably 2 years later, we'd still never done it on stage. We'd done it for friends around the ship, other performers.
Staff.
Yeah.
You know,
you were still doing magic on the ship.
Still doing magic. Yeah.
And one night in the Caribbean, we had rough seas, remnants of a hurricane in the cap, and nobody was going out. All the passengers were sick, and the captain insisted on having a show. because normally that show would have been canceled. But he had special guests on, and he wanted a show. And he specifically requested The Magicians and The Singer. And a good friend of ours happens to be in town this week, but we'll miss her.
She's Linda Caron, great singer.
And so we did had to do a cabaret show with Linda, 15 minutes each or 20 minutes each. And we couldn't do any of our normal things that we had planned for that night. And I remember that night was going to be the broom levitation, broom suspension, and a little bit of comedy and fire eating.
I was hoping that was right.
You did fire eating?
Both Tess and I.
Did you really? Did you like exchange fire and that kind of thing?
Oh, mouth we did to it mouth. All.
Oh my goodness! I just can't imagine that. Wow, that is funny.
But it was on a floor show that we did. It was a lounge show, and there was no way we could do the fire. So I said, Tessa, this is going to be the perfect night. Let's debut the mind reading act. And Tessa had never spoken in a microphone.
It's terrifying.
She was backstage. I went out to introduce her. She's sick, but she came out and we did it, which by our standards today would have been a pretty poor job. But then, that's all the audience talked about for the rest of
the cruise.
The
very few that were there.
Wow. Maybe that was a short, people. Like a 15-minute thing, or how
we
long?
We did 15-20 minutes.
Okay.
And probably in the theater that held, or the showroom that held, let's say 800 people, if we had 100, I'd be probably overestimating.
Oh, yeah.
And so those people who saw it were just talking about saying,
that's all they talked about.
Right. And of course, it was so stilted and very slow, no dramatics whatsoever.
Sure.
Lots of pauses, I guess the way anybody begins with that sort of act.
Yeah.
And we just couldn't believe the response that we got. And we were just thrilled because we thought, okay, all this effort we've made is going to be our future for sure. And
yeah.
We're very, very happy about that.
But we continued to do the illusions and we'd mix. So we would open our show with illusions.
Yeah.
Then the mind reading would be a middle. And then we'd close with Metamorphosis and the Impalement or whatever it was. And even Doves we'd do. So Tessa would be doing these costume changes where she would be 1 minute in a small sequined outfit, bathing suit style, magician's assistant from the
80s. Yeah.
And then she would come out and do the mind reading in a gown and then come back out and change into something to close the show that was a little more skimpy. But it was always people wanted to talk to her about their psychic experiences. Or
because you were the one that was the receiver.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's why it wasn't him. They didn't care to talk to him. They wanted to know because you're the one who could read.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's even worse today, Scott, because at least then I did some magic.
Right. That would help.
We were talking with Mark Kalin last night and joking about how, people will come up after the show and say, can I have your autograph? And Tessa will sign it. And then I just want Tessa. they don't actually say that but it's...
No, but that actually happened here at Magic Live because on the very first night of the party, they had that really fun game with all the driver's license.
Yes, that's right.
So we were one of them. We were the ESP duo.
Yes.
And, we were moving around and talking to people. So some people would come over and I would sign at the bottom and go to give it to Jeff. And they're like, no, I've got it. I'm gone. Yeah. But I said, but then it's not the... And they were gone.
The whole thing.
I was like, wow.
It's a duo,
But we've really designed the show where I feel I don't do, we talked with somebody last night also about that, where, well, what do you do? Do you do any magic after the show if we're talking to guests or attendees or audience members? And I really don't feel it's my part because in the show, it's all about Tessa having this amazing ability.
Yeah.
And my job is to orchestrate it, to sort of play the
intermediary. To choose the volunteers in the audience. You're just kind of you're the assistant, what it appears
I'm
to be.
I'm Tessa's assistant.
Yeah.
In reality, I think that's what
because you're sending him out into the audience to say, why don't you go out and find me somebody?
Yeah. I remember we were at, I don't know if it was the Meeting of the Minds, and one of the members' wives was asking them, well, what is he there for? They didn't even know why he was there.
They don't understand methods, of course.
We were happy to hear that because that said definitely we were doing a good job.
So a little at a time, you kind of got rid of the magic and did more just the mental. Did you ever do a magic square or anything as you kind of started to do some
magic square now, but we struggle with the magic square because it gets we often open with the magic square or actually it's not an opener, but it's second or third off the top.
I think it's a good placement for it, personally.
It's a really great effect. And I think lots of people do wonderful presentations of it. I just really like what we do with it. And people talk about, often people will say, that's the thing I love the most. If it's a scientific or an analytical crowd.
Sure,
or,
engineers, whatever, sure.
Yeah, if they're really intelligent audiences, that particularly appeals to them. But we don't want it in for us. It's like the linking rings of magic or it's so
It can be a little bit long and protracted, you know, unless you have the right audience. You know, I was doing a nights tour for an energy conference one time, and you got a lot of engineers are coming around there watching. It is long, you know. But I keep taking off the mask, and I would say, you know, that, well, they're number one, you know, in the business or whatever. Whenever they come to whatever number, we've got, you know, 16 different offices around the country or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But they were, you know, touching the screen. But the point is that, you know, you're right. There are certain things you need to know who your audience is.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I agree with you. But I think for the Magic Square, we're able to keep it pretty snappy.
Yeah.
And we don't want it to become heavy and boring because we know a lot of people out there in the audience either can't add or don't like to add or think about mathematics.
That's a really good point.
But yet it still impacts them because they see this unfolding. And those that are brilliant at addition or in mathematics think it's a wonderful thing to see. And it's just a great way to present, especially if it's a family audience. And corporate audiences too, but as is happening with so many effects, you know, we have a lot of magicians going over to mentalism, and so the Magic Square is, you know, we're always concerned that it's seen out there.
Thing, yeah.
And if we're working with an agent or a meeting planner that we work with regularly, and they hire a lot of magicians or mentalists, we always go through and ask them, what have they seen? What do you think they've seen, this crowd has seen? Because they tend to remember some of those types of effects. If they're not sure, we just don't include it in the show. Because we don't want people to feel, oh, we've already seen that. You know?
And that's the one trick that people say, we've seen that before, more often than any other effect. In fact, no other effect in the show people would say we've seen before, except the Magic Square.
But let me, to that point, and I don't know if this is true for adults as it is for children, but Silly Billy, you know, David Kaye had talked in his book about where that when a child said, oh, I've seen that one before, that doesn't mean they don't want to see it again.
That's true.
They want to see it again. It's like, oh, I've seen that before. And when they're in their script in their mind saying, and I want to see it again.
Well, I heard that podcast. That was on
you? Yeah.
I remember him saying that. I agree. However,
I just wonder if it translates to adults or not, or whether that means they really mean it when they
I think he's got a valid point, and I think it works, except we don't want to be the act. We don't want to be the performers that are like anything else they've seen before.
That's a good point.
I just don't want to come out there and I want to be something that they've never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't take away from David's comment. And I think it's right.
No, I think he's right on about what he's saying too.
Mm-hmm. And talk about Magic Squares, and you hit on a point there, Tessa, as far as being able to add. You know, there are a lot of people, it seems like, who do not have, they can't tell time or whatever. I was doing a watch trick and there was some young man, going to say probably high school age. And when I was finished, I said, what is the time on the watch? He said, I can't read a watch.
Oh, we get that all the time.
I was going to say, tell me about that. Those kind of, I bet you've had that happen.
Oh, yes. And it took us a long while to tune into, but Jeff sort of had the impact more because, of course, he's in the audience getting people to help out.
So. We do an effect with a clock and a watch, a borrowed watch from the audience. And I've learned now to say, as I look at their watch, I'll show it to them. And I'll say, it's 2 o'clock, right? And so that all they have to do is agree.
Uh-huh.
Because if I show the watch and say, what time is it?
They are put on the spot.
It's probably more often than not nowadays, especially in colleges, they're wearing these as fashion accessories. And they're getting their time off the iPhone.
Wait. They've clearly declared that to us.
Seriously?
Yes.
Their analog watch is just a fashion accessory.
It's a fashion.
Yeah, they take their phones out to look at the time. They don't look at their watch for the time.
Huh.
They don't even know how to read that time. And
well, along that line, my mind's being blown on that. But you know, of course, they're not teaching cursive writing in anything.
That's true.
Yes, I'm wondering how people are going to be able to read the Constitution, let alone write their own signature or whatever in the future. But what kinds of experiences have you had where that is, well, what's the most odd thing? You probably get this question a lot. What's the most odd thing that you've ever gotten from an audience member that you picked up on or didn't pick up on?
Well, I mean, we talked about the odd thing now, it seems like twice in the last year, but it was something that happened at a college, because I think the college kids, you know, they do. I love it if somebody brings, for example, a banana. They'll go from dinner into our show
and they'll carry
and they'll carry a snack for later on that they picked up in line in a banana. And if I see a banana, I always run over while Tess is speaking and I'll say to just put that in your pocket. And then later, 10 minutes later in the show, I'll say, stand up. And it's the person and she'll say and they'll hold up, maybe not by now they're holding the keys or something else.
Yeah.
What Tessa will do is she'll say, but hold on. She'll say, I'm getting something else. And she'll say something in his pocket. And, well, of course, everybody's looking down at his pocket. And she'll say, is that a banana in your pocket? Yeah. It's just a funny moment.
Yeah. It's a great moment. But that's a fun moment. But,
but that's something that we're kind of orchestrating.
I'm thinking of the girl with the vial.
She had a vial, and it was a
I couldn't believe when I knew what it was.
So it's a necklace with a glass vial and a little gold
charm. Some liquid
charm
in it or something?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. And it was liquid.
So maybe you can see where we're going. And yeah. It was a white liquid, and Tessa got it. But what it was her boyfriend's DNA. Other way to put it. And she had it saved and put in there for.
Yeah. And I was up there thinking, and I think I actually said out loud, because every once in a while I think something and I say
you
it
say
out
it,
loud.
And then you go, oh, did I say that out loud?
Oh my God. I said, do I actually have to say what that is? So, because I was so stunned by it. But I think for me, probably the most powerful experience I had was a bullet. And it was from a police officer. Mm-hmm. You know, that this all came together in not that specific order.
Yeah.
And
that was a conference of police officers.
Yes, right? Yeah. But it was a bullet that had been removed from his body, that he'd been shot, it was near his heart.
So he carried it as a lucky charm.
Yeah, he they couldn't believe he lived.
Lived, yeah.
And in my mind, it was just so powerful. And that was quite a few years ago. So that was when we were really, maybe our first few years of doing it in corporate audiences. And I was just stunned because I never had anything like that. Everything generally can be typical, but Jeff is busy trying to find those great items. And, you know, for the longest while, of course, I'm wearing the blindfold, so I don't see what he's doing. And we don't always make videos. We tend to make a lot of audio recordings of our show so we can go back and review things. Mm-hmm. And when I saw the first video, I thought, that's why you sweat so much. He's just flying through the audience.
Yeah.
Even on Penn and Teller, they got a clip of him that he was deciding which way to go. And he actually did a spin, a pirouette, like a ballerina would do.
Yeah.
And then he went off in that direction, his jacket flying around. I thought he's almost like an illusionist.
Yeah.
So I just think that he gives so much in that show to find those perfect items. So it can be interesting to everybody.
The items have to be more than just, it's a comb, it's a hairbrush.
It has to be something personal.
Then you get, I mean, there's been a few occasions where we've had ashes from somebody's cremated remains.
I was going to ask you about that very thing, if that's happened.
That's so powerful.
Yeah.
And it seems like people, I wouldn't say it's a trend, but it's more common to find people carrying that with them.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
they want to share that, of course. It's not something that they're, and it's going to be a tearful moment for them.
Yes.
And especially when Tessa will say, well, that was your grandmother and your mother. It's typically a mother.
That's exactly where I was going to be going. Whether there might be those emotional moments in your show in which you kind of, it will get really dramatic and more tearful or more, and then you got to pick it back up then again. I'm assuming there's things like that that you have frequently.
Got to pick it back up, but you have to give it that moment, let that person, I mean, they wanted to be in that moment and they deserve to get that audience looking at them. And just, it's a very powerful moment, and there's a lot of applause after it, and it's easy to transition.
Oh, yeah. And I think it's a very healing moment for them also and other people. And it's what we all hope for in our shows, to have all those different elements of emotions to make the show not all uniform from beginning to end.
Right.
And that one, but it takes of courage, and you really have to know how you handle that moment, because you don't want it to get out of control. You don't want it to be too huge, mm-hmm. or it's going to be too hard to move the show forward, because it'll seem like you don't care as much or you're callous.
I wouldn't do that alone, Scott, without Tessa. Honestly, I think I would just avoid that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
But Tessa's background is, you don't mind me saying, but her background, she did tarot cards. She did palmistry. Tessa loves this world.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't, we try not to mix that part of it too heavily within the show, but it's beautiful when Tessa takes over and speaks to that person from the heart. And it's a very powerful message. And I'd say more times than not, you end up getting these great hugs either on stage or after the show. They can't wait to come and hug you.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas for most performers,
because they had an emotional attachment with her.
They just
feel like she's made this amazing connection, and she really does from the heart. And so
they feel better. They feel better after. And I don't think they're expecting that they're coming to a show and this is going to happen for them. And I guess is where I come from in the background. You know, I grew up in the Caribbean, and especially in St. Lucia, where my dad is from, they really believe in our dreams,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe more on a spiritual level, but they get what scientists would say, when you wake up, you know, you're coming out of that dream state. So many things happen in your dream. So if you have a dream and you tell your family, usually it's like your grandmother would interpret it for you, what it might mean. So I was surrounded by that all the time. I was also surrounded by the support of allowing each child to develop at their own pace. You had to do well at school, but whatever your personality is, even if you were immature, that's fine. That way you can become completely yourself. And I actually believe if I had not lived there for probably about 10 years and experienced that, I don't think I would be doing this act. I don't think I could do it as well as we've done it. I wouldn't be prepared for
it. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you really had that background long before you ever met Jeff.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And she still believes, Tessa will read and look at videos online or of the kind of the new agey thing. Whereas I'm a big skeptic and a lot of things in life, but Tessa
yin and yang
is not.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm pretty balanced about it. And I try to convey to people, especially after our shows, to have a bit better balance about it and to trust themselves, not to rely on other people, especially if they're asking for a lot of money to give them answers, to be very careful of that, because the majority of what they might need to know is within them, but they just have to find out a way to tap into that and to really believe in themselves.
So that's the kind of thing that you tell people. For an example, that I remember probably the first time I went to the Magic Castle, it would have been 81, I think, or maybe 80, 79, 80. Anyhow, Glenn Funkenstein and was working there, and he was doing his Iron Mask and everything and some readings and whatnot. He was working with Francis Wilder, and they did the cabinet and everything as well, but it was after the show was over that people were lining up over to the side of the Palace Theater over there, asking him questions about their life, their love, their future, you know, their job, and whatnot, and he was taking all questions and just kind of, you know, next, you know, kind of a thing, because you just have to, you know, people are going to be doing that. So after the show, do you kind of go out and meet and greet and talk to people?
Yeah, we both do. Mm-hmm. We both do. We go out and we do that. And absolutely. And also, it's sort of an interesting advantage that people come and ask me questions about if an illness of someone or their situation. And of course, I'm not a doctor.
That's got to be tough.
Yeah, and I don't want to give financial advice.
Sure.
But I also understand that that person may not know who to go to. Uh-huh. And so by them asking me, so I don't say, don't ask me this and don't ask me that. It's like, ask me anything. Mm-hmm. And so when they do ask me, for example, if we're at a campus, I've had people with suicidal thoughts. And I know that gets really heavy and not everybody wants to deal with that.
Yeah.
But then I get them to give me permission to connect them with the advisor that's there so that
that's
they can
idea.
Get the help they need
they
on
need,
campus.
Sure.
And they also, I give everybody my card. If you ever need me, I'm there, because I'm never going to tell your secret.
Right.
And I'm not trying to...
I could be your suicide hotline. Just call me.
And I'm not going to give them the advice, but I'm going to let them know you're not alone.
Yeah.
And so if you don't know where to go, then I'm going to help you find that place.
Some of those people are really looking for someone to talk to, and they
Absolutely.
Don't feel comfortable talking to someone that they know on campus, and you are really kind of a disassociated, third-party, objective person that they can share with, I would imagine, more than they could their friends.
I think so. And they're afraid to tell their friends.
Yeah.
But the world's changing more, so people are opening up more. I mean, look at Facebook.
Social media.
Yeah. They tell everything out there. It just boggles my mind.
Yeah.
I never intended to do that and to be that. But people ask that of me, and because I do care about them, it drew it out from me. And I wanted to do it in a very responsible way.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to be careful. And people say, well, that's misleading them. But, you know, anything we say to anybody is going to could have impact on them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not afraid of doing it whatsoever. In fact, I think I would feel that I'm not fully doing what I should do in my life if I don't help people that ask for my help.
But but we also say you're not a fortune teller because you're not telling fortunes.
No.
She's not giving
you're not going to predict
a
Super Bowl
reading.
Or,
there's no predictions.
No.
She just talks to people.
No, I think people have to understand that they're standing there facing their life and there's all these different paths in front of them. And depending on which one they choose or the one that they feel drawn to, or people will say coincidence or whatever, however you decipher it, that's going to determine where you go in the future.
So do you help
life.
Push them in that direction? In other words, usually when someone comes with a question, they normally have an answer.
They do, but they may not even know what the answer is. Still, you are correct. Where you're leading this to, I just trust my inner thoughts. Whatever pops to me, I go with that flow, and lights spark in their eyes. I can see that they get this connection, and I basically turn it back to them.
You're affirming what they're really wanting to hear, kind of.
And then off you go, and they feel better, and now they have a little bit more confidence.
That's great.
Yeah, we get great. So many emails like years later. Well, people will connect just
recently. Yes. Following up and just, say, hey, now I've gotten married, I've got this job, or I've graduated, and they tell you what they're doing.
One of the most profound ones for me, that was many years ago, a young woman was talking to me, and she was studying science, and I don't remember what her actual focus was, and she was talking, and I just said, you know, I know you're talking about science, and it sounds like you're doing well, but I see you as an artist. And I think that you're ignoring that side. And she said, oh, no, I've never really dabbled in it. I don't think I could do any art whatsoever. And I said, well, I'm not even sure why I'm saying that, but I just felt compelled to tell you this. So I'm just creative, giving that to you, and do with it whatever you want.
Yeah.
And 5 years later, I received an email with a photograph attached. And it was this painting with watercolors, and over the top was an opening gallery of her art.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, my God.
Wow.
And it was not that I think that I have this power. It's just somehow in that moment I saw something about her. I don't know what it was, and I trusted whatever I thought to tell her. And it helped her to think down a different pathway. She said, I just opened that door, and I couldn't close it. Once I did.
Do you have brothers or sisters who kind of have that talent?
Not the same way. And I'm the only entertainer in my family. And I don't think anybody expected any one of us to be an entertainer. But mm-hmm. I was bitten by the bug as a child, as I think a lot of people are. And maybe in the magic world also. And I wanted to be either an entertainer or a doctor. And then at some point when I was about 9 or 10, I realized that they're kind of the same thing, or they accomplish the same goal and making people feel better.
Right.
But of course, my family were like, well, you can't really be an entertainer. You can't have a career. You're not going to make money. And I trusted them. They're my parents. So I believed in them, but I didn't give up on it. And as time progressed, that is what I became.
Well, you know, in that regard, that was something that Stan Allen had talked about at Magic Live on the opening morning, in which he was saying that there needs to be a dialogue open about encouraging young girls, women in magic, to follow their dreams and to not be discouraged. Do you ever feel that way? Do you feel intimidated whenever that you're by? I mean, you're always with Jeff. Seems like I never see the two of you apart, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But when and if that you ever are in a magic situation, or if you would you feel uncomfortable, or do you ever as a child, or as you were before you met Jeff and learning magic? Did you have a good group of mentors and people helping you, or?
Well, I was very shy as a child. That was one thing.
Just one thing magic does is it kind of empowers you.
It does.
You know, gives you better self-esteem and everything.
Well, even any kind of entertainment. But of course, the entertainment I did was, you know, playing piano and dancing. So I wasn't speaking.
Yeah.
Which my parents encouraged us to develop all different sides of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But my father especially, he actually went to university after having four children.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt that without doing that and getting a better career, he wasn't setting a good example for us. So my mother had a great career as a nurse. But what he really focused on, or who he did, was my sister and me. He wanted us to understand that as women, girls becoming women, we probably are going to have a harder time, more of a challenge for our career path. And so he really pushed us. And that's one of the reasons why he didn't want me to do entertainment. He thought, go to school, go to the university, get a great education, and then you can do whatever you want down the road.
Right.
And that was when I was on my path to become a doctor, or it shifted off to a little bit of business when Jeff and I were brought together and boom, that was it.
How did you meet, by the way? Was it on a cruise ship by chance, or what?
Tess was a model, a fashion model, and I had a roommate so I had a roommate in Toronto. I was 22 years old, I think, maybe 23. And I just moved to Toronto. I was in radio. I worked in radio.
Okay.
I got out of it to pursue my dream as a magician. Moved to the city, had a roommate. He had a friend who was a fashion designer who was putting a fashion show together.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked me to host the show because she knew I worked in radio, but also to do some magic with one of the models. I said, sure. So Tessa was one of the models. She was going to Ryerson University in Canada and working part-time in modeling. And so when the designer said to all the girls at a meeting, we're going to have a magician, who wants to help the magician? Tess said, it has to be me. I love magic.
And entertainment.
She'd seen Mark Wilson. She'd seen
Mark
videotapes
Wilson.
Of Mark Wilson when she lived in the Caribbean. They didn't have television of that nature. So people would come back to the island with these videotapes, and she love Mark Wilson and love magic. And
Backstage Illusion is the one I saw.
Okay,
I never forgot it.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know who was coming. I had no idea what to expect. This girl knocked at my door at the scheduled time that we were going to rehearse. I had a zigzag and broom and mutilated parasol we were doing. Tessa walked in and she picked this stuff up so fast, and she was such a natural on stage. So we did the fashion show, and then we started getting bookings for a corporate event. And I said, well, I need an assistant. I'm new in the city. I just moved back to the city. And so it just kind of snowballed. We got booked at a resort north of Toronto that summer. And Tessa, by that point, had been working as a legal assistant at an attorney who was also president of the Variety Club in Toronto, which is a big entertainment. Monty Hall used to be the worldwide president, I think, of the Variety Club. But her boss was of the Toronto chapter. So we would go do these shows, and then she'd be late coming into work the next day, every Monday. We had a Sunday gig. We drove in a little Volkswagen bus up north north of Toronto. It was so slow, that bus. I think we could get maximum 50 miles an hour on the highway.
Good mileage, Joe.
We'd get back late at night, and Tessa would be late coming into work. He said, why are you every Monday you're late? And she said, well, I'm helping out. I'm moonlighting with a magician. And he was all for it. And then a few months later, we got an offer for a cruise ship, but we had to go for 6 months. And Tessa told him, well, she's going to leave the job to go work on this ship with me. And he said, if it doesn't work out, you've always got a job back here.
That
but I want you to go
to
do it.
Great. He had a good relationship with the company.
It was good. He just loved entertainment. I wanted to go back to the question you asked because I didn't answer it. And especially seeing that Stan Allen brought this up when he opened up the whole session. I think the only time I would say that I really felt uncomfortable in the world of magic was taking on the lead role in our second sight act. I wasn't used to being out in the forefront.
As he was just saying, you were the assistant, basically,
So to turn the tables, that took a lot of work and a lot of shows, perform,
yes,
to get the courage and to get over all the fears and nervousness. And it was wonderful. But aside from that, I don't have a lot of magic knowledge and, I sort of come and go with it. But I've always felt welcomed by magicians, the magic world. I mean, the majority of my friends or the people, even if I know as acquaintances, are magicians and mentalists. Mm-hmm. So it is my world.
That's true.
And I can't imagine not being a part of it. So being uncomfortable, maybe at the very beginning, but people always made me feel welcome from the get-go. So no, I don't feel uncomfortable at all. I think what Stan was saying is a great thing. But I don't even know if I should mention her name, but Laura London was saying, instead of saying that we should do this, she said, just book more women. That's all you have to do. Just
Simple.
Get us out there.
Yeah.
And Julie Eng was one of the hosts yesterday, and she did a fabulous job. And
boy, she's good. I just love her.
She's a host today, too. She and Jonathan are doing it again the second day. Yeah.
She's great.
And nothing against Jonathan. I think what I'm doing here is what I think a lot of women don't want. We don't want to be like, oh, look, it's a woman doing it.
Sure.
It's just like, are we doing a good job? That's all that really matters. And of course, yes, we are women, and we love being women, those that do. And we like that aspect of ourselves. But we just want to be accepted as, are we doing good magic or not? Are we doing good mentalism or not? And if we're not, please just help us. But understand that the male factor can't always put us on the right track, not just because we think differently, but we move differently. And maybe because of what we wear, we have to do it in a different way.
Right, Well, that's one of the things, too. Of course, women don't have pockets. But you do have hand purses, handbags you can carry or whatever.
Sure.
But another thing is, it seems that in several cultures around the world, that the family seems to encourage the male to be more dominant and the woman to be more shy in the background.
Right.
Even I'm sure when you're selecting volunteers, it's more difficult to get a woman volunteer up on stage sometimes than it is a man.
I don't know, actually. I know what you're saying. I know what you're thinking. But I think with a psychic act, let's call it what it is.
That's a little bit different.
Psychic entertainers.
Okay.
I think that the women, maybe it's 50-50. But I think women really want to share their experience, especially with another woman. I think
that's a good point.
Yeah, and maybe they wouldn't be. I don't know. I've never really worked alone as a mentalist.
Mm-hmm.
I've done mentalism off the top of the show, but I no longer do that because I think it would defeat the purpose of what we're trying to create, the illusion that Tessa has the ability. So
Or that it's our connection, because we will say that depending on the circumstance or the effect that we're working together. It's, you know, not me and the audience or the audience to me. It's between the two of us. So we kind of float with that.
You probably get a lot of funny gags or whatever people when you're particularly the cruise ship and you're seeing the same people, you know, day after day at the table say, well, you know, what's your wife thinking now? What does she think of this or whatever? I mean, what
you're
kind
right
of
on
funny
Scott,
lines?
It used to be when we did the magic, the number one line you'd get when you'd leave your cabinet after the show. Can you make my wife disappear?
Sure.
And then now that we do the mentalism, it's, can you tell me what I'm thinking? Yeah. Or can you tell me the lottery numbers? But and they think it's the funniest line that you've ever heard.
Exactly.
And you have to kind of react as though that was just great.
Oh, wow.
How original is that?
But you really inside are thinking, oh my God, I don't want to hear it. I can see it coming. Uh-huh. And, yeah.
But what you were saying, you know, Jeff, about women being more eager to be volunteers in a show, our show, Psychic Mentalism Show, I think it's really become balanced now. Again, because of social media, again, because of everything that's changing, men are much more open to it. And I think we were listening to a podcast recently, and they were saying, a magician slash mentalist, that he had a man stand up, 6-foot-tall man who was crying, and he didn't know what to do with that. And it's like, yeah, well, men have emotions too. And Abby, Goldring, sorry, blind thought on her name, when she did her lecture yesterday. And
that was so touching and emotional.
Was it ever? And because Stan had introduced that about women being, you know, different than men, and I was thinking, wow, we women are lucky, you know, in this moment we can let our tears flow. And I can't tell you the countless men
who are doing the same thing.
Oh,
I was.
Yeah, everybody I've spoken to.
I was
to.
Like, okay, this is good. I'm the same. It's a human being experience more than anything
And when she
else.
Stood up and walked out of the wheelchair, the whole time, you know, I'm just, starting to think and tear up about that. And when she was slowly walking across the stage, and at the end, over by the curtain, you know, her husband grabbed her and held her up, you know.
You know, I heard at the first show, her husband didn't come up. She walked all the way off.
That was the first show that I saw. And she did. She walked all the way to the very end. She walked to the curtain, at the end of the curtain, and then, because I could see his hand reaching through the curtain, and I was seated over on stage right. People said from stage left, they could see him grab her and pick her up.
Oh,
because in the second one, he came out maybe 10 feet out to meet her.
Oh, no. She walked all the way across.
I think it was more powerful. She walked most of the way across, but you needed that moment of
to
those
see.
Two, and he didn't
bonding.
Even face the audience, so it wasn't about him at all,
but
it is somewhat about him.
He's
too.
Supported
going
her,
through this together,
oh my gosh, and for 22 months, I guess, it was a long, for those who hadn't listened to that earlier podcast, because we went into that in a lot of detail, it was one of the highlights of Magic Live, was when Abby Goldrake had talked about where that she had an accident during a double levitation in which that things went horribly wrong and fell and had broken her spine and was never supposed to walk again. And she's amazing and up and say up. She's still going through a lot of pain and it's difficult for her to do much of anything. You know, they said she may never be able to breathe on her own even. And so it's amazing how much how far she is. But then recovered. But then she is young. I mean, if that were to happen to an old guy like me or something, and pretty much you can write that off, you know, it seems like. And getting back on a lighter note then also, there are very few second sight acts, I mean, that are working, you know, Christian Painter and Catalina.
Yeah,
of
they're
course,
wonderful.
Tommy Tin. Yeah, I mean, they talk a lot like it too. You do the very comedic, you know, back and forth. You know, Tommy Tin and Emily are a little bit more serious. They're fun. They're kind of light, you know.
I think Christian and Catalina, they do a lot more comedy than
a lot of
we
comedy.
Kind of do some comedy and a lot of seriousness. Mm-hmm. But when we began, I don't think, I know Glenn Falkenstein and Francis Willard, and Danny and Jan Orleans.
Yeah.
And
Tommy
us.
Tucker? No, it was Tommy probably
Tommy
before that.
Tommy was gone. Well, he was still alive, and Tommy worked with us, him and Liz, but they weren't performing anymore because Tommy was in a wheelchair. He couldn't do it. So I don't know of any other performers. And then we were the only ones then Glenn and Francis had to give it up. And, now there's a lot more people. I can't tell you a few people here we've even met who have said, come up to us and just said, I want you to know that you've inspired us and now we're doing it. And it seems to be a lot more popular now. And I'm sure.
Well, my wife and I did that a little bit for a while back when we were on a cruise ship working overseas that we did that as well as just like about a 10 minutes, kind of like with you, you know, it's like, well, okay, we're going to kind of dip our toe in it to begin with and see how this works and see how powerful that it is, you know? And it's one of those things that I just really like because again, you don't have to carry much of anything with you.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
That's what they always say, that ideally is you want to pack flat and play big, you know, and there's nothing better, I think, than a two-person, but it's just not easy, you know, at all.
No, we've, I mean, we still rehearse a few times a week, but for years, probably 10 years, it was every day. Mm-hmm. Every day we would mm-hmm. commit to it, and but we enjoyed it.
When I was working at Magic Island regularly, back when it was open in Houston, there was a fellow whose name will come to me in a minute, but I remember sitting at the dinner table before the evening, and that was one of the advantages of working at Magic Island was all the performers would who were working that night or that week, you know, we would sit at a table together and eat before our shows, you know, and whatever. Yeah, I was working close up and everything. Did you work at the Island?
We did. Okay. 2 weeks or a month. I can't remember what the booking was.
Loved it.
That was a lot of fun. I must not have been there then that time.
Yeah. But no, you were there.
Was I there?
I
then?
Remember
Maybe that was where
there.
We met
the,
then. Okay.
You came in the audience. Yeah.
But you remember that we were, you know, sitting at that table, that kind of booth over there with Scotto, you know, Scott
yeah.
Hollingsworth and everybody.
Before the, for dinner.
Before dinner. Yeah. Yes. So my point was that, and again, this guy's come to me in a minute, and big, tall, kind of a big bruiser of a guy, but he had a funny look, attitude on stage, and his wife, and they did a lot of magic, and he was kind of like the Johnny Thompson of magic. I mean, he knew everything about magic, but they did a two-person mind reading act too. And the funny thing I'm getting to, boy, this is a long way around the barn, that as they were eating, and he would be talking to us just as we are now, and she would be eating, and she'd say, a comb. A bracelet, you know.
They're rehearsing.
They were rehearsing. Yeah. He would be coding her while we're just having a conversation, eating dinner, and she would pick up on a word or two, and then just kind of, as she was chewing her food, would, you know, say, yeah, a bracelet. You know?
That's funny. I don't know that act, so I'm wondering who that is. They did magic and mind reading?
Yes. You know, Banachek had said that it's one of his all-time favorite people, and that the name will come to me later. Vic and Mary.
Vic
and Mary.
He was from the Bay Area.
Yeah, he was from Bay Area. You know, big, tall guy. You're getting an art detest. It started to come to you.
Yeah.
Vic and Mary. Vic, wonderful couple.
Yeah, we've never met them, but Banachek actually sent me a video of them. I think it was around the time of the Magic mm-hmm. Island. He told us that around that time we worked there.
Yeah. That's when Banachek and I had first gotten together as partners back in 87, you know, when I was getting ready to go do a radio broadcast at home. And he said, well, I've done a lot of radio. And I said, well, you know, give me some tips and one thing led to another. And we put together this thing of Radio Magic. Yeah, that was our first project.
Yeah.
He was a house mentalist and I was a house magician. Well, anyhow. So as far as some of the other things that you've done in your travel around, what has been one of your favorite destinations? I mean, I remember talking with Charles Green III many, many years ago, and he was saying that he loved to go down to like Key West. It was just a beautiful place, you know, just to kind of, you know, whether that you want to perform there, you like to go there for a holiday or, you know, when you want to relax or someplace that like when you're cruising or perhaps when you perform, just like, I want to go back there again. What's something that's one of your favorite destinations?
Well, you know, we used to live in a sailboat and we used to take sabbaticals for 2 months a year and just sail over to the Bahamas, and we didn't work. So mm-hmm. we would just, so yeah, I love Key West and all that kind of thing. And I'd probably say that.
That would be
However, it. I'd rather not work when I'm there. So
yeah,
that wouldn't be my, I think the Magic Castle's our favorite place to work. Our favorite memory probably of working anywhere would be Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
But that was back in
the
80s.
Why would that be? What did you do in Egypt?
It's such a magical place, and it was a wonderful experience. We were on an armed forces tour. We worked for the United Nations, so that meant we would work for maybe the Turkish army one night and the Israelis another night, and we went into Egypt, and it was purely vacation time, so we had mm-hmm. a week off and toured the pyramids, and we met such wonderful people there. I remember being in the market, and we would do mind reading just for people, the stall owners in the market, and out of nowhere, this guy came up. And he was a shop owner, a merchant, and he stuck with us for the rest of the day. Didn't want any money. We just became friends. And then 20 years later on Facebook, I get this friend request from this fellow in Egypt, and it's him. And he says, remember me? And he sent a photograph that he had
taken
of
us.
Yes. In the market.
Oh, yeah. It was just amazing.
Just great people over there that we still work every year, a few times a year in the Middle East, and always love working over there. We're just great people. Mm-hmm. Such a different culture, as we all know.
When you do, is it like for a corporate thing that you're doing, or is it usually a cruise ship where you're kind of going in and out, or what?
Usually corporate. It's always corporate.
Yeah,
in fact,
I think
isn't
the last one we did in that area in Amman, Jordan, was for a radio station, and it was a young fellows who wanted to promote their English version of their radio station.
Well, that was the last public show.
That was the last public show.
Yeah,
there,
because
yes,
we've done
yeah.
a lot more corporate.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was a fun
that
night.
That was great. And one of the guys that worked at the radio station, he was pretty new working there. He was a magician. Mm-hmm. And he had knew of us, heard of us. He didn't know us personally. And he thought that they should bring us over to help promote their radio station, the English version of the radio station. And so that was a blast.
They like, set up at a hotel, a big, it was a tent theater, but it was a beautiful, you wouldn't know on the inside
tent,
it was
yeah.
a tent. On the outside, it was a big white tent.
Yeah.
But they had theater style seating, big stage, proper lighting and sound. And then maybe 6 weeks to a couple of months before, they said, do you mind if we bring in an opening act? It's a young guy that, you know, somebody's recommended to us. We don't know him, but, we, you know, but strong recommendation. And
right.
he would open for you. Who was that? Is Derek Hughes? We'd never heard of him.
No,
and so
we
now
went
you do.
Over and,
yeah, oh, yeah.
And now we're great friends with Derek. But at that point, Derek went out. He did his 30 minutes of comedy magic, and then we came out. And well, one night we were after the first show, we all went out for celebrations after, and we were at a table, and Derek, us, the promoters, the radio station owners. And the whole room was full of these guys who had worked on the oil fields in Kuwait, I think, or maybe Iraq.
Yes,
and they
one of those,
had just
sure.
come back from how many months away.
Yeah.
And they're celebrating. This probably happened every night in this club. I don't know.
Yeah.
They're jumping around on tables with bottles of champagne. And they came over to our table and they're pouring champagne. People are taking a swig out of this bottle. And Derek took a swig.
He passed it to me. I took a swig. I wasn't even paying attention. I took a swig. I passed it to Jeff and he went, oh, no, I'm not drinking from that bottle.
Because it had been around the entire room. And,
and I went, oh, no, I didn't see that. He goes, oh, yeah, it has.
Yeah, everybody's had that.
Yeah.
So the next day, we were up in the dressing room. Derek was down doing his 30 minutes. And so he was 15 minutes into the act. We came down from our room ready to, you know, to get backstage for our spot. And the closer we got to the theater, we should be hearing Derek
yeah.
through the PA. But all we're hearing is this whispering sound. And as we got closer, he had lost his voice completely.
Wow.
And he went through it, trooper that he is. He went through the show, but no voice.
And Jeff turns to me and goes, that's going to be you tomorrow,
yeah.
right? Watch
How
this.
Was your I'm voice? Like, oh, yeah.
And sure enough, halfway
really?
Through
so
our
you got
show.
It too.
Yes. Yeah. I was in the middle of saying something, and I thought, who was that? It was several sounded like a frog said something. And then I thought, oh, my God, it's me for sure. But that was the last show, I think, when the
last
princess
show,
came, right?
Well, they had, right, the first two rows were the royal family. And they said,
wow.
The princess is coming tonight, or probably one of the princesses, but she came in, Arngard. A big Hummers, and they escorted her, and they said, don't go to the princess. Whatever you do,
don't
stay
use her.
Away.
Yeah.
Don't use her in the show, but you can go anywhere else. I said, well, what if she volunteers? And is it just don't try not to use her. Well, sure enough, after first or second object,
yeah.
the princess is standing
holding
up, waving,
yeah.
and it was her driver's license, and she's waving it in the air. And I look at the promoter, and I look at her, and I just went to her, because I have to go.
Sure.
It would be rude not to.
And
so, great connection. Tessa
oh,
told
gosh.
Her names and dates of birth, and then some other objects she pulled out of her handbag. And
so it was in English that you could actually...
Yeah, we're all
yeah,
English.
All
yeah.
English.
It's amazing. They yeah. all speak English. And,
but I mean, the driver's license didn't have some sort of Arabic...
No,
or anything on it. Okay.
Everything seemed to be in English. Hmm. So they made a connection, and then the princess came up after the show and said, I want you to be my guest at the palace tomorrow. Please
wow.
come, and here's my number. And she... And so... But the next day we woke up, and Tessa was so ill.
So sick. Oh, my gosh.
So we couldn't do it, and we had a few days off at a resort that they put us at on the Red Sea, so we went over to the... Or the Dead Sea, I guess.
Yes,
so we went
Dead
over
sea.
To the Marriott Resort and had to... give up on that plan to go see
right.
the princess. So a week later, we got back to Maryland, where we live. Actually, you mentioned Canada. We don't live
yeah.
in Canada anymore. We still have a home there, but our residence is in the U.S.,
okay.
Annapolis. Got back to Annapolis, and Tessa phoned the princess.
Because
on
she
her
had
phone.
Given Jeff her cell number
wow.
after the show.
Okay.
He came over and said, I have the princess's cell number. So I called.
And the princess says, hello, and she's hello, well, I can't remember her name, but this is Tessa. And I could hear it from the other side of the room, Tessa!
Yeah.
And she goes, everybody, it's Tessa! Tessa! I'm like, oh my God. And I just thought I had to call her to
yeah.
apologize because we sort of vanished and we weren't sure she got a message why we didn't come. And she says, oh, anytime you come back, you have an open invitation. And we said, anytime you come to the U.S. and you need anything, you have our number to call us,
yeah.
right? So that was really fun.
That just sort of illustrates
yeah.
the power of that connection that
right.
can
yes.
be made where, well, I'm sure magicians get that too. I mean, when they really hit people
oh, yes.
trying to
yeah.
powerful, of course.
Yeah.
But But mentalism can also be very powerful and on a different level. No tricks, no big effects, nothing. In fact, we come out on stage and there's no props. If we have a magic square, that's the only prop. But everything's in our pockets. So we walk out clean and, hey, with nothing. All it is this emotional mind-to-mind connection.
I think that's one of the most important things is the connection that you can make with the audience and not only break that fourth wall, but you actually, you know, kind of penetrate their mind. So this way they become part of you as well. So that way that it's like they're emotionally involved and engaged with you, that they want to like you, you know, as well. You know, it sounds like that, you know, you guys do that. Well, I've seen the show several times. I know that you do easily and everybody's like, how do they do that? And I love it. And it's like, they stop, I think at some point everybody stops trying to figure out how it's done. It's
exactly,
like,
yes.
I just, I'm blown away. Just wait a minute. How does that happen?
There's always the people that all they want to know is how it's done.
Well, yeah,
that's all they want to.
Or they're really skeptical and they don't want to.
Well, that's that type of personality.
Yeah, and that's okay. But I think even the skeptics in the audience, they get that we get that we're doing a show. Mm. And, you know, we know it's really believable. We get that, but we're doing a show, and so they can just let go after a while and join in with everybody else and hopefully enjoy it.
It said, you know, those who believe, no explanation is necessary. Yes. Those who don't believe. You know, then
no explanations
will suffice. Yes, right. And the same thing there is I think that people, when they come in to see the show, certainly that they have, like whenever the Jamie Salinas and I do these seances, I will use that quote because when people come in, they have, some are skeptics and some are not, some are believers. And, you know, you are what you are. We're not there to change anybody.
Right.
You just have to recognize that you're hitting everybody in each seat that's going to have a different focus and belief system, I guess, when they come through. And so when they come and talk with you about that, have you ever changed anybody's idea? In other words, they are now skeptics, or they're no longer skeptics, or they now believe, or, you know,
People may say that, but I think if somebody says that they were skeptical, but now they believe, I mean, I would never go to a show and change my whole belief system. But just like when we watch a movie,
but when colleges,
we fall into it, right?
But college students, I think, you know, they're still malleable.
They are malleable, and you're right. And that's why I'm very careful with them, especially I want to empower them on how to believe in themselves. But if it's somebody older and they say that, I really believe that they had a certain amount of belief within themselves.
Sure.
And then I understand they've never seen anything like this. But I try to remind them, well, this is a show and take it for what it is. You know?
Yeah.
But I don't want to break the mystery. I don't want to burst that bubble completely.
Sure.
Then it would be like going to a movie. And you know when you're going to a movie and somebody yells out the ending, or you know, you're on social media and they tell you how it ends, they just ruin it. So I'm not going to ruin it for them.
Right.
So it's just a delicate balance of sort of bringing them down a little bit to reality,
right,
but not completely going, okay, show's over, boom, forget about everything you just saw.
Right.
But it's been something we've learned. I think it's just come after years and years of
doing it.
We're comfortable with it, but it is careful ground because the key is not to offend anybody.
Exactly.
And especially in corporate situations, if they're an intelligent crowd and they think you're trying to change a belief system,
right,
you're done.
Now you've offended them.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're angry, and no, we don't want that.
Yep.
So it's, you know, you're right. That is the perfect expression to those who believe and to those who don't. And it's not.
Exactly.
That's not what it's about.
Well, I tell you what, as we start to wrap up, and I appreciate your time. I mean, the time has flown by here.
Yeah, we do.
We find that when we listen to the podcast that it always flies by. You can't believe you've listened to such a long podcast.
It's the same thing with the conversation. Typically, when I'm talking with someone, it's like, look at my watch. Oh, my goodness. You know, that's because I know we've got some things to do and places to go and people to see. And so, of course, I always end with asking about your magic word. So what is your philosophy, each of you?
First time we did, you stopped us at a magic live 2 years ago. You said, "What's your magic word?" I said, "Tessa."
I remember that.
I said, "Love."
But I think, you know, I think commitment, and it's commitment to the art, commitment to your magic, commitment to, in our case, the relationship. It's just being committed to what, to being yourself, to being unique, to learning the craft as best you can. And we've had, we probably picked one of the hardest things to do in magic, but it's being committed to that. And we've worked so hard at it to be the best that we can.
So stay committed to your dream.
Stay committed to the people around you, to the family, to your love.
Stay committed.
And if I may, if there's time, because we're a duo, but we do have individual thoughts. I was talking with Naomi, who is one of a trio that participated in Australia's Got Talent. Mm-hmm. And I was speaking with him at Magic Live, first time I ever met him, and we got talking, and I was saying to him, what I really do believe is follow your intuition. And you could call it your gut feeling, whatever you want. And he was saying there's three of them, so they don't always have the same ideas and they don't always want to go in the same pathway. And so what's really important is if you get a feeling, especially when you wake up in the morning, and even if it's illogical, don't ignore that feeling. You don't have to do anything with it, but it's like you're saying to your inner self, send me more thoughts, clarify this more, and more thoughts will come. Because when people create ideas, if they told the person they were going to do this idea, everybody would be saying, you can't do that. That's stupid. Oh, that wouldn't even work out well.
Right.
So forget about that. Follow that intuition, because that is what can take you on a path that's unique and allow you to be most successful. And I know Siegfried and Roy believe that, because we saw them last night.
Siegfried, not both of them.
Yeah. And said hello to him. And what did he put in my hand but this coin?
Really?
And he squeezed it in my hand and he says, if you ever have a problem, if something you need to change, just hold this in your hand and believe, and it will happen. And he gave me this coin. Maybe people will think it's hokey, but I thought it was a wonderful moment. And it's Siegfried and Roy's Secret Garden. On the back it says, look for the magic all around you. And I thought that was really cool.
Wow.
And so I actually brought this out. I had it in my pocket today.
Yeah.
I put it in my pocket. And Jeff told me yesterday that we're going to do a little, you know, not the podcast.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be a 5-minute interview. And then he said, no, we're going up to my room and we're going to do an hour. And I thought, okay, I'm pulling my coin out because I'm sure not ready for an hour's interview, but that's all good.
It was a late night last night.
It was a very late night. But then you brought out the beautiful Boggle wine, well, Bogle, which Bogle. We've decided to call it Boggle wine.
Yep.
And that's what you do with everybody, I think, to learn their secrets or bring out the best from them, right?
Well, it's easy to do that with you guys. I mean, that you are so congenial and likable and good friends, and that, what smiles, my gosh.
Thank you, Scott.
Great.
Nice of you.
Thanks very much. I appreciate your words. I know that everybody listening to this will get a lot out of it then, too. It's always great. Boy, I don't know what else to say.
Oh, thank you.
Makes
and we wish
happy.
Everybody
this
the
is
best.
Wonderful.
All
thank you
best.
Very
Thanks.
Much. So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Jeff and Tessa Evison. This is Scotty out. Wow, I don't know about you, but that's one of the reasons I like to have these chats. This way I get to know my friends even better. I learned a few things about Jeff and Tessa that I didn't know or hadn't read about before, and I hope that you guys learned something there too. And by the way, at the end, when Tessa said that she had this coin that was given to her by Siegfried, if you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, and you will see some pictures that I'd taken during our chat and while we were in Las Vegas, plus some other promo photos that I'd pulled from the internet. But also, I took a picture of the coin, front and back, so this way you can go and see the coin that Tessa is talking about. Also, just prior to that, about 3/4 of the way through, I seem to have had a brain meltdown and I could not remember the names of Vic and Mary Kirk. So I apologize for that. And Vic and Mary were good friends and appeared at the Magic Island frequently. And they are what I feel some of the unsung heroes. They are some people who, in my opinion, were like the American Fred Capps, or, you know, really like Johnny Thompson, from the standpoint that Vic had just an unlimited knowledge and was so very creative. But he knew so much about magic, and you can ask him about anything. Anything, and he had just such a wonderful mind that few people had tapped into. As I said, I believe that's why the Banachek had revered him so much, and it was because of that vast knowledge. And so, nevertheless, that was the name I was trying to come up with, was Vic Kirk. And Vic and Mary were just a wonderful couple, and it's a sad loss to the magic mentalism world and entertainment in general, the fact that Vic is no longer with us. So thank you, Jeff and Tessa, for being my guests here on the Magic Word Podcast. And thank you guys also for being regular listeners of the Magic Word. If you guys ever get an opportunity to see Jeff and Tessa Evison perform live, you need to go there immediately. Book tickets whenever you can and travel wherever you need to go to see them. They are amazing and they are a wonderful couple. And if you get a chance to say hello, be sure to say that you heard them on the Magic Word Podcast. And now it's time for some product reviews of things available through Murphy's Magic Supplies that you can buy from your favorite magic dealer, like the Magic Word Podcast. This week, I'm going to give you a review of 3 different products, and they're all mind reading or mentalism related. I thought it'd be perfect, since we had just talked with Jeff and Tessa Evison, that we continue the theme here by talking about some of these mind reading things. First up is the ESP Ability Test, which is by John Bannon.
The effect of ESP ability test is that you first lay out a card that shows the five images, the drawings of the center cards. Then you have a bunch of cards, and you can show that they're all random, the five that are throughout this group, and there are 25 cards in particular. And as you will then deal out five cards, you have the spectator push forward one of the cards. You then deal five more cards, and then they push out another one, from another column, basically, pull one forward. So now you've eliminated one, you've still got four, they pull one more out. And then you continue that sequence until you keep laying down five more cards until finally you're out of cards and they've got five cards in front of you. Now, as you turn over the cards, you can see that they match exactly in the same order as was on your prediction card, which was out in front of them the whole time, that shows those five symbols. So after they have then shown that their ESP ability is excellent, then you say you'll notice also that these have different numbers on them as well, which they do. On the bottom or top of each of the bottom of each of these cards is a number. And you can go through the cards and show that, lists for an example, that if you would have had this symbol, that it has a different number than the symbol that you had selected. Or if you had gotten this particular card, it has a different number than the symbol you had selected. And then on the back of the card that's been out in front of them, that shows, again, the correct orientation of the symbols that they had selected, you turn it over to yourself and you're reading aloud that if they are guessing, if they select 1 through 64, that they're going to be in this category. If it's 66 to and above, that it's going to be in this other category. But if it's 65, then it's awesome. And of course, the numbers, when added up, all equal 65. You turn it around, show that that's indeed what the card says. So it's a double effect, basically, in which that the volunteer will select the correct sequence of the symbols of these Zener cards. And then second of all, as a real kicker, and this is really a kick in the butt, I think is really cool, is that you do have this number, which equals exactly what they had selected. The reset on this is probably about 60 seconds, so it's something that can be done from table to table. And I say from table to table because this is one of those effects that you might want to carry around with you. It certainly plays well in a restaurant setting when you have a little bit of time. This is not what I would call an opening effect because it takes a little bit of dealing and explanation and a little bit of talking. It's not going to be one of your flash openers for sure, but it's a very good middle piece. I wouldn't say necessarily it's a great closer, but again, I think it's a good middle piece. Like John Bannon has a brilliant mind, and I had reviewed his DVD set, Move Zero, which I highly recommend, and it has great ideas for beginners, but on up. I mean, I say beginners, the skill level is easy. So anybody can do it, but professionals can do this and certainly make it look like a miracle because they're amazing. And nevertheless, this is another one of those things, which is his idea. So what you get with this are the 25 cards. The Zener cards or the ESP symbol cards, and also, of course, the prediction card with that information on the back. You also then get another link to a URL, which then you go and watch this video that gives you the presentation performance, as well, of course, as the explanation. Now, in addition to the explanation of the effect, he also goes into something else that could be done with playing cards. So, to back up, that what he has done is taken the Matrix Force and applied it in a way that I had not seen. It fooled me in watching the presentation to begin with. When he explained it, then I thought, well, I already do that kind of thing, but I do it the traditional method with a Matrix Force. But his idea was brilliant. I don't know that it is all necessarily his idea. I think that it is. He calls it the Matrix Reloaded. And it is something, again, that can be applied then to a deck of playing cards. And with a fairly easy setup, that you can do this with a deck of cards, so it doesn't have to be done then with the ESP symbol cards. It's a brilliant little trick. It's a nice little thing if you want to carry this around with you. Again, you're going to need to have a table. That's why I say it's a restaurant type of a thing. It's not a walk-around cocktail type of thing. So it's something you could do on the street, but I wouldn't necessarily recommend that either if you're a street magician. And I say it in the typical
When I talk about street magicians, I mean those who pass the hat and actually do a show on the street. So this is not one that you could do there because it does take a little bit of time. You could put some lines into it, but still I think it would be hard to try to keep an audience focused in a street environment to actually stay there to watch you for this presentation. It is really good when performed in the right situation, and I like this. I like it a lot. Oh, I will say one other thing, too. This was produced by Big Blind Media, which was the one who brought you the DVD set, Move Zero by John Bannon, and it is well-produced, well-directed. It is well-filmed, and you'll enjoy watching it as well. So the explanations are very good. I will say that the set of cards that I received was different from the ones that were shown in the video, in particular that the indices, that is where the numbers are on the cards in the video, it showed them being in the corner, kind of like the index of a card, on one side, not on both, but just on one end. The deck of cards or Zener symbol cards that I had received had a number which was just on the bottom, in the middle of the card, bottom middle of the card. No big deal. I'm just saying it was just a little minor thing because he does talk about the location of the cards and how you can turn them around. Nevertheless, you'll enjoy the presentation once you buy this and you watch the video as well. So again, you're getting not only the cards, but also the explanation of this wonderful matrix reloaded force and how it can be applied to other kinds of things. So again, this is something I would recommend. I think it's, again, performed in the right situation, along with some other kinds of effects that are mind-reading types of things. This could be just the perfect filler to put into your presentation and be part of your act. Again, this is called ESP Ability Test by John Bannon and available from your favorite magic dealer. Next up is going to be one of two videos that I want to talk about that's available from Sans Minds Productions, and they were both by Morgan Strebler, and I think they are both worthy of your time to look into. First of all, we're going to talk about Liquid Killer. This was a follow-up to his Liquid Metal DVD of a few years ago, in which he was talking about metal bending. This particular one is specifically about a fork bend, in which the tines of the fork are bent, not just in different angles, but also twisted. The neck of the fork is twisted, and one of the tines of the fork is twisted, and then the shaft of the fork is twisted into the Strebler bend or the S bend. And so this is something that, as he explains, can be prepared beforehand or it can be done in an impromptu situation. So if you have the ability then to present this in an informal situation, then you can do that. But the advantage of having this done beforehand is that you don't have to worry about some of the moves, as you would imagine. Anyhow, I like this, but for me, and perhaps it's just my fingers are not as young as they used to be, and it's difficult to try to prepare this even in advance. I mean, certainly in an impromptu situation, it would be more difficult to try to put, for me at least, to try to put some of these twists in there. I would probably have to put more effort into it, and it when I fiddled with it, it hurts my thumb whenever you're kind of preparing this beforehand to push the tines back and then to try to put the little twists in it that you need. It's difficult enough to put the twist in the neck of the fork. Actually, not that difficult, but the tine in particular gets a little bit more difficult. I said to try to push that with your thumb. I just or fingers. Difficult for me. Maybe not for you. And you might kind of fiddle around with this. And again, I think in a younger person's hands, they might be able to do this a lot easier than I can. I don't have the strength of my hands or fingers that I once had, and so this might be something better for a younger person than it is for an older person like me. Nevertheless, it's a pretty cool effect. Anytime that you're going to be bending metal in front of your audience and kind of, well, it's not in their hands. There's a lot of work that gets to be done in this. And in fact, in the performance of this, when he's first showing it to you, that Morgan is staring straight at the camera, and the camera does not drop below to show when his hands drop and he puts the work into it. It continues to look at his face, which is kind of odd because
I would think that if you are a volunteer in real performance time, that your eyes will not just stay focused on him, but it always moves to where there is some movement. So anyhow, I just think that the camera could have done a better job of following the hands in the performance of this at the beginning of the DVD. But again, it's called Liquid Killer, and it is a killer. It is something that once you've done, you can't take the bends back out of it, certainly. You can, and there are a couple of things as well, so that you have one in which that the neck of the fork twists and then it falls off, so it's broken. You have another one that you show, and the second one is where all the twists and everything get put into it. And he goes into great detail in explaining how to do this, and it is fairly simple, given the right strength of fingers that you can put into the work, or putting the work into the fork, I should say. So it is, plus some tips and subtleties it gives you at the end of the DVD. It is a fairly well-produced DVD. The presentation, it looks great, and I think this, if you do metal bending, this is something that you might want to add to your repertoire. Of course, I'm a little prejudiced, having worked with Banachek and Psychokinetic Silverware that kind of started all this many years ago, but it has been taken, I wouldn't say light years, but it's been, it's gone forward. It's continued to evolve, and I would say that this edition of Liquid Killer offered by Morgan Stribler is very good and worthy of your attention. Finally, we will review the product called Unlock, again by Morgan Stribler. And this is one I was looking forward to seeing, and I'm glad I did. It's a really cool idea. There are three different ideas in here about how to essentially appear to unlock a volunteer or spectator's phone. This is, as Morgan says, the new technology. This is the new deck of cards. And in a way, I tend to agree with him from the standpoint that decks of cards are not something that people commonly bring around with them and they associate with a magician, as opposed to a cell phone, which everyone has a mobile phone with them and these days. And if you borrow that, that's something very personal to them, which they have an investment, basically an emotional investment in their cell phone. And also all the information that is on their phone that is personal, very private. So there's nothing really more personal than the phone, and to do magic with it is really great. And Morgan is starting to put out some ideas and things doing magic and mentalism with this. And this is the first one. Before you get into the rest of the stuff, you're first of all going to have to unlock the phone. Well, this is a pretty cool idea. He has three different ideas, one of them in which that you will apparently have the PIN code to unlock this. So a person would unlock the phone, and then you would guess their PIN code, and then you turn around and show that indeed you have unlocked their phone. The second one is a thumbprint, which is a lot different idea. The idea is with their thumbprint is that you would say, I have a universal thumbprint, so it unlocks all phones. And so you then, by touching the phone, of course, it unlocks. Pretty cool idea. And the third one is one that's a little more gutsy, in which that you can use for either an iPhone or an Android or whatever. Now, all these ideas are really great. Personally, I've used an Android phone since the beginning. I had an iPhone for a short time, didn't care for it, although I have other Apple products, an iPad, and I've got a Mac and everything too, but I don't have an iPhone. I've always been comfortable with and like the Android. So with the Android, of course, you can have a similar kind of an effect in which that there is a passcode that someone has to put in order to unlock their phone. And so the obvious thing is that you're asking people to begin with that if they have a phone that is password protected, then you can go forward with this. I wish that on this video that Morgan would have gone into an explanation of how this can be done then with an Android. And I really don't want to get into the secret of how that this is done, but perhaps that the idea that he uses for the iPhone is different for an Android in that the Android has other ways of doing the secret thing that needs to be done. Boy, this is hard to describe. Let me just say, I think that it would have been nice had the DVD also included some methods for unlocking an Android phone. But I don't have an iPhone. But I think that if you're familiar with the iPhone, as most everyone is, except for me and the few of us who do, or the old school Android guys,
that I think this would be really cool. And again, because this is something that is current technology, everybody carries around with them their mobile phone. This is something that you will use. You don't have to carry anything with you. They're carrying it actually themselves. There are some tips and subtleties he has at the end of the DVD. This, again, is by Sans Mind, and it has some street performances and then has the explanation, which is explained thoroughly, as Morgan has always done in his previous videos as well. So this has everything really that you need, and you don't have to carry it with you. So this is a product that's recommended by the Magic Word. I think it's pretty cool. It's, again, called Unlock from Sans Mind, and was created by Morgan Strebler. Well, that wraps up Three for Thursday, and I say Thursday because that's when traditionally that these podcasts are released, except for those times whenever I'm giving daily updates at magic conventions. And all of these products come from Murphy's Magic Supplies and are available from your favorite magic dealer, and I suggest that if you want to help the Magic Word, you can go to themagicwordpodcast.com, go to our magic store, and you can click on the things there, and you can order directly in. And so that's another way that you can help the Magic Word, in addition to being a friend of the Magic Word, which I would recommend then as well. Well, I think that's going to wrap us up here for this week, and I hope that you've enjoyed the conversation we've had with the Evisons, as well as taken some advice on some of the products that I have reviewed and enjoy and recommend here on the podcast as well. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and follow your intuition, and stay committed. This is Scotty out.